Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. Dominic, we welcome back a fine guest and a friend of ours. He is former U.S. Attorney James Santel. Jim, welcome back to the big show.
Good to be with you once again, and looking forward to next Tuesday when I'm with you in person right there in Madison.
Awesome. Party, party, party at the Jade Monkey. It's going to be a fine party indeed. Jim, if you don't mind, for the sake of sort of doing these things in order, can we start from the charges during impeachment number one? Donald Trump was accused of the quid pro quo with the Ukrainian, Zelensky, and we've now got some new tapes out. And I didn't hear all 41 minutes, but I heard enough to know it certainly seemed like Rudy Giuliani was laying the groundwork for the quid pro quo, was basically trying to convince the Ukrainians to make an announcement of investigations of Joe Biden. This is precisely what Trump was accused of in the impeachment. Jim, why wasn't Trump convicted?
You got it just right. This is the prep work, if you will, right? This is the president's unofficial but plainly lawyer-type representative engaging with a foreign official, which again itself is violation of federal law, but laying the groundwork for what Donald Trump did 3 days later, which is pick up the phone and call Zelensky and say, but we need a favor from you, though. And that, of course, that those famous words, of course, a predicate to you give me some dirt about Joe Biden and his son, and perhaps we can work with you in supporting you against the Russians and doing other things related to legitimate foreign affairs. Rudy Giuliani, now on tape, we know, 3 days before that, talking to one of Zelensky's deputies to set that up, unmistakably using some code words, but not a lot. Anybody reading that, anybody hearing it aloud, which we now do, understands that he is talking about the quid pro quo. The president was also talking about 3 days later, the groundwork being laid by Rudy, the deal not consummated, but attempted to be consummated by the president a few days later. More evidence. You certainly would like to think this would be further compelling indication of the president's complicity in this. But again, that's history that's regrettably already been written.
Jim, perhaps another indication that Rudy just gets the facts wrong, sort of mixed up in this mess, are Hillary's emails and the DNC server and sort of the conspiracy theory that it wasn't the Russians that hacked. It was somehow the Ukrainians. And Rudy throws that up in the mix as well, does he not, Jim?
He does. And again, this is consistent with all of his public statements and private statements, plainly. Recall that infamous outdoor event in the East Coast when he was talking the same kinds of things. We throw up all of these outrageous things about Hugo Chavez and about elections and about Hillary Clinton. And we hope that somehow amidst all of that, either nobody is paying attention or that somehow you suggest to people that there really is a there when there is not. And again, the lack of clarity is one problem. The complete fabrication is the larger problem, right? None of this is real. None of this is true. And the fact that he inserts it then inside, but again, as I said before, is an inappropriate diplomatic engagement by a private citizen to a foreign official on behalf of the United States government, in fact, the president, plainly with the president's authorization, but nonetheless inappropriate in its own right. Again, a mess of a presentation, inarticulate, not clear, and I would argue once again, violative of the law.
Well, and you mentioned it, you know, there's no dirt to be had, so, you know, make something up or just say you're going to have an investigation. We just need something to, you know, post and spread and put around the internet and blame Biden for something. Look, the Ukrainians are investigating him. Jim, thank you for that. I want to get to your old job, though. Maybe be a little clear here, Jim. Department of Justice, that was kind of like your area, right?
It was. Okay. I worked for the Department of Justice for a little over 30 years, and six and a half of those as United States Attorney for the Eastern District of Wisconsin.
So then you have some insight, perhaps, on the workings of that department. This E. Jean Carroll defamation suit now being picked up by Merrick Garland and defended by the Department of Justice. Is this, Jim, is it a procedural thing, or is this something that they are actually trying to protect the institution of the presidency, or are they defending Trump? Jim, what the hell is this all about?
You know, regrettably, it's probably all three of those to greater and lesser degrees, Dom. And for the second time in 2 weeks, I indicate to you that I think this is a wrong decision. Once again, what we've got going on, obviously, is whether or not the Department of Justice, the new Department of Justice, should now appeal this ruling previously entered by Lewis Kaplan, who's a district court judge, who said, you know what? When the president speaks about E. Jean Carroll and says that he did not, in fact, sexually assault her at Bergdorf Norman back in 1995 or 1996, says that on three different occasions, that is not within the scope of his employment as the president. And that's what the Department of Justice is now appealing, basically saying that when the president says these kinds of things, even matters related to his personal behaviors prior to his becoming president, that those things are covered by representation of the government. I think it's just plain wrong. And I would offer to you just as a perspective that, you know, this is once again this situation where you're trying to apply regular standards and principles for which there is legitimacy to a deeply abnormal presidency. We saw this again 2 weeks ago with respect to the Barr memorandum and Amy Berman Jackson's order, that again being pursued. Again, these fundamental standards, yes, indeed, it's a good thing to have these in place. There's a reason why government officials should be protected in this instance when in fact they have done things in the scope of their employment. How can you argue legitimately that the president's even statements about E. Jean Carroll, what he did or did not happen, whether it was defamation or not, that could be tried, but those things are within the scope of your employment as the chief executive. And like many others, I part company with the Department of Justice on this position. I did this many times, finding that people had in fact acted in the scope of their employment. The, you know, the standard is postal carrier engages in a car accident while he or she is delivering the mail. Nobody would argue that that's not the scope of employment. And so you defend that person, the United States becomes a defendant. This, I think, is very difficult to justify. I wonder out loud if once again you have some people inside the Department of Justice applying this very standard, very appropriate principle under circumstances that do not support the ultimate decision. And not to say that the ends justify the means, they're getting there by an inappropriate application of a principle that again is denigrated by virtue of its application here. So again, objection and disagreement, respectful, but disagreement with what the Department of Justice is doing here.
Well, setting aside, you know, justice for E. Jean Carroll, you know, Jim, as you mentioned, this is the second time in 2 weeks that we've had things come out of this department that, you know, we question, and I trust your judgment as well. Do you think this is something that perhaps as an organization, Garland coming in there, doesn't want to rock the boat too much and perhaps will, you know, somehow down the line address these in what I would consider a more proper way? Or do you think that this is something more telling for what he's actually doing, that he's in charge and he wants this done?
Right. I think it's, again, it could be a combination of all of that. He plainly is new again to the department. Merrick Garland is not the Department of Justice generally. We know that he was there, had highest levels in the past. So we can't completely look at him and say you're a complete neophyte when it comes to the what happens on the sixth and seventh floor of the Department of Justice. That's not an excuse that doesn't go very far. My sense is that perhaps he is deferring right now in his first months to those people, those institutional people, those civil servants who are saying, you know what? We've got to ensure that when actors engage in conduct that is in the scope of their employment, that we will in fact defend them. And that's the principle that's all important here. And again, I have to believe the Attorney General knew about this before they decided to pursue this appeal. So it certainly would have crossed his desk, even informally. And he has not, for whatever reason, up to this point, at least on these two instances, said, you know what? Again, abnormal presidency, standard good practices, good protocols, good policies, but not applied here. Why? Because they don't apply here. And if we analyze the way that they should be applied, you'd come naturally to the opposite conclusion on yesterday's decision and also the one of a week or so ago.
James Santel, got to ask you, when do I get the Don McGahn testimony or the transcripts thereof? Haven't even heard a lot of public comment. What I missed, Jim?
Well, I don't think you missed anything yet, although again, I'm looking at my calendar. He testified on June 4th. They said that somewhere around a week after he is testifying, again in camera, not for our public consumption, you would get those transcripts. So I add 4 to 7 and I come up with 11. I think my math is pretty good for what it's worth, 782 days since the Mueller report was released, just to make sure the math is there. But should be coming out very soon. You would think this week. You would get those transcripts. The report is that he stuck pretty closely to the statements he made to Bob Mueller in the course of the Mueller report, the Mueller investigation. So no surprises there, but maybe a couple of things around the edges that will also give credence to that. And the other important piece of this is, of course, it's one thing for Don McGahn to testify and then have to be committed to paper. It's another thing to hear his voice and to say, you know what, my president was doing things that were, he used as a more colorful word, but he's doing crazy things, and I can't do what he wants me to do. I cannot tell the world that he did not ask me to fire other officials. I cannot tell the world that that he did not want to fire the special counsel and told Rod Rosenstein, or asked me to tell Rod Rosenstein to do that. I'm not going to say that. And so it underscores, probably in the larger setting, the difficulty that I suspect so many people, regardless of party, had inside the White House, who are hearing these amazing requests, inappropriate requests, illegal requests from the president. And what do? They're gnashing their teeth. They ultimately say, I just hope it goes away. Don McGahn is one of those people. That transcript, I suspect, when we read it out loud, as we probably should, reflect that kind of angst, that very great difficulty that he had in doing his job as White House counsel.
Our fine guest, James Santel, can't wait to read the transcripts of the Don McGahn. But Jim, quickly, if he testified to what he testified to Mueller about, the obstruction of justice, that's damning testimony of the former president.
It is, absolutely. And again, you won't be surprised to hear me say that among other, at least 6, 8, maybe 10 of those instances could have formed the basis for an obstruction of justice prosecution and should have been pursued by the United States Congress. Again, we're losing time on all of that. Likely that former President Trump gets a pass on all those obstructive events.
Come back, more James Santel, more Devil's Advocates.
Lordy, I hope there are tapes.
I never said there was no collusion between the campaign.
I want to know, where is the server and what is the server saying?
And we are back. Thank you for listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show. James Santel, former U.S. attorney, sticking around for one more segment. Jim, appreciate you doing so. Some more angst I got over the DOJ, Jim. Reporting from the New York Times, I believe, Meadows, a former chief of staff for President Trump, after Barr left, reached out to the acting attorney general and asking him to, you know, get involved in some conspiracy investigations, that, you know, do some election interference investigations. Jim, is it normal for a president's chief of staff to reach out to the acting DOJ chief to do an investigation? Is that normal channels? Is that how investigations get going?
My understanding is that the chief of staff would call to confirm that the attorney general is coming to a cabinet meeting that afternoon. But beyond that, there shouldn't be a whole lot of engagement. You're absolutely right. This again by Meadows, when he was the chief of staff, reaching out and saying, you know what, now that Bill Barr is gone, maybe the deputy now acting as the attorney general, maybe you'd like to pursue what Bill Barr did not. And again, inappropriate, yes, that's an understatement by about 10 degrees. Illegal, probably not. But again, completely contrary to what should happen. We now have a situation, interestingly, where again, the administration, observing that, is saying today about what we talked about previously, the E. Jean Carroll matter, we knew nothing about it. We were not advised of it. We learned about it when you learned about it. That, I would offer, is a good situation to be in, but underscores again the inappropriateness, the impropriety of what happened previously, and plainly an attempt politically by a White House to induce an investigation, a criminal investigation, for political purposes. I don't know where to begin to understand what would prompt anyone, including someone who is not familiar with Department of Justice practices. Fundamentally, you've got to know that is an inappropriate thing to do. You're inducing an investigation without any basis for that. And you're taking on usurping a decision that is within the attorney general's purview to make.
Jim, George Conway came out today and talked about some of these issues. And his quote, "You're running close to sedition here, trying to get government officials to act in support of a conspiracy theory to overturn the results of the election. I mean, there could be a criminal conspiracy involved here. That's not protected by free speech." you know, Jim, if we talked about this earlier, this seems to be just kind of a same continuation of this philosophy that Trump has had throughout his presidency and the way he behaves and how he tries to turn things on its head. And at what point do you put all the pieces together and say, yes, this, when you're asking other governmental officials to engage in this process, let's call it, but you know, you really want them to investigate conspiracy theories and attempts to overturn an election, when do you cross the sedition bridge?
You're coming awfully close to it, aren't you? Again, we've talked in the past. You have provided good instruction, both of you as professors of the law, to your listeners about what conspiracy is. It's an agreement between two people. An overt act happens, something you do in furtherance of it to make it closer to fruition. When you call up and you say, you know what, I'd like us to agree that you're going to go down this road. You're going to investigate this thing, for which I really have no basis, but I'm going to ask you to do that. And, oh, by the way, why don't you just convene, again, not a part of the reporting, but that overt act could be, let's get a grand jury to take a look at this, maybe issue some grand jury subpoenas, let's do some interviews, let's otherwise use the legitimate purposes of the Department of Justice, let's get some FBI agents involved to go down this road. That, again, obstruction of justice, conspiracy. Again, I would say that the sedition allegation is probably within that broad umbrella too, that you're doing something to undermine the very trappings of our government. And people have gone to jail for much less than that in the past.
Our fine guest, James Hantel, former U.S. attorney, for a few more minutes. Jim, I want to move on to impeachment 2.0. The impeachment of the former president was over the January 6th insurrection at the U.S. Capitol and his incitement thereof. And obviously, that was not a conviction either, Jim. But the U.S. Senate today issued a bipartisan report, sort of sanitized, didn't really look for the why, but it did address some of the issues. Jim, first and foremost, what was your impression of the Senate report, the reporting you've seen of it so far? And above and beyond that, we know about the civil suits, the Capitol Police, the Eric Swalwell suit. But, Jim, could we see criminal charges directed towards Republican lawmakers or possibly even the former president regarding the January 6th insurrection?
The answer to part two is yes, and that's in part the reason why we should be pursuing this. Today's report, significant. Again, note that people like Rob Portman coming forth and saying the commission of these two Senate committees was not to identify the causes, but rather the reasons why the response was inadequate. And again, is this an important day in American history? You bet, because it underscores once again what we did back in 9/11. Here once again is the 9/11 commission report. What was one of the principal findings of it? That 9/11 happened, even though we had all these indications that this would happen. We got reports coming up, and today we're hearing that as early as December of last year, there was a 7-page memorandum, other indicia inside law enforcement indicating this would happen. We did not have the leadership. We didn't have the structure. We were too divided in terms of our operation to bring this all together and say, you know what, this is real. That's what 9/11 was all about, and that's why that report is so important. That's why I would still advocate that the bipartisan commission is important to do to make those same findings. It also then, to your second portion of your question, Dom, goes to the issue of what happens next. When you do those investigations, when you talk to people, they will indicate what they knew, what they did not know, and that can ultimately be referred to the United States Department of Justice for prosecution, along with all of the other prosecutions, 550 that they're doing right now, for those people who actually did the assault on the Capitol on January 6th.
James Hantel, former U.S. attorney, I've heard the saying, curling up with a good book. I suspect you sleep with that Mueller report, sir. Way too intimate with that report, Jim.
I'll bring all my books with me next week, so we've got the library right there when we talk in person. Looking forward to
You're
it.
You're going to have to bring a U-Haul down to the Jade Monkey. Our good friend James Hantel will see you at the party 1 week from today, Jim. The rest of you, you better stick around. There's more Devil's Advocates coming back. Phone lines open for you as well. 844-967-2789. Take care, Jimmy.
Thanks, Jim.
Take care.
If I did a tenth of what she did, I would be in jail today. Sedition!